Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
Fresh graduates and employers, we are speaking with you today. We have a poll for you coming up in just a moment, but let's do some background. Graduates in Malaysia are struggling to secure jobs that match their qualifications, despite a rising unemployment rate in the country. And whilst policymakers have called for intensified efforts from the government to fix this problem, industry experts believe it's a lot more complex than it seems. We're asking the question as to whether or not your company is currently hiring or looking for fresh graduates. Why or why not? What are the options we've got, Chris?
So on Twitter, we've got a yes, hiring fresh grads, yes, but no luck hiring, no, hiring for experience, and no, not hiring. Currently, it's no, not hiring is at 42.9%, and yes, hiring fresh grads is at 36.5%, no, hiring for experience at 15.9%, and yes, but no luck hiring is 4.8%.
We'll have somebody to speak to a little bit later on in the show. We'll be hearing from Jeffrey Williams. He's going to be expanding on his thoughts and comments about this ongoing misemployment issue. But first, let's just have a bit of a chat about this. Recently, Warisan President Shafi Abdal called for intensified efforts to provide employment opportunities for graduates so that they would not have to depend on jobs paying low salaries. He urged the government to provide balanced equity in the national job market, especially to the middle and low qualified bottom 40, the B40 group. Shafi also added, for this purpose, it's proposed that the government prioritise the gig economy and entrepreneurship for graduates who are looking for employment. In addition, contract positions with government agencies and government-owned companies can be offered to them. Referring to the Department of Statistics Malaysia, DOSM's data in July, a total of 778,200 Malaysians lost their job or are still unemployed, which is an increase of 4.8% from the previous month. The unemployment rate in July 2021 was the highest for the year. Shafi noted that although the government has allocated 530 billion ringgit in the previous 8 economic stimulus packages, the unemployment rate continues to rise without a precise solution. He also said the issue of mismatch in the country's labour market should be addressed immediately so that it does not hinder the country's ongoing economic recovery efforts.
In response to Shafi's call for the development of entrepreneurial skills among graduates so that they could fit into the gig economy, economist Jeffrey Williams, who we'll be speaking to later on, said that this would be good if the goal was to create freelance professional jobs bringing good and stable incomes. He was also quick to add that, quote, if the idea is to create a generation of delivery riders and e-hailing drivers, then this is exploitative, low-paid, low-value-added work, which will be devastating to Malaysia's economic development. He also blames government policy for the inability of university graduates to find jobs that match their education. Speaking to FMT, Jeffrey noted that the 10th Malaysia Plan aimed to create 3.3 million jobs by 2020, 68% of which would not require a university degree. He explained this plan aims for 56.3% to be low income and 29.5% to be middle income. So the Malaysia plans have been completely successful in creating meaningless, low-paid, low-value-added, precarious and informal employment for many years. When asked about possible solutions, Jeffrey said the issue needs to be resolved by the market instead of the government and that reforms on the supply side were crucial at this point. He added the government must create the right market environment for companies to invest and employ people without government interference within a social market economy.
Now, Carmelo Felito, CEO of the Centre for Market Education, called for the reform of tertiary education that would see improvements in quality as well as in the selection of students so that universities would produce talent for specific high-level positions. He said secondary education should also be reformed so that people could enter the job market without tertiary education. This means that secondary school curriculum must cover the teaching of professional skills. Tertiary education should be reserved for scholarly work and preparation for liberal professions. And we'll have Jeffrey Williams, as we mentioned, on the line a little bit after the break to expand on his thoughts and comments about this thing that we're calling the misemployment issue amongst our local graduates. What's your take on this, Chris, just before we take a quick break?
Yeah, I think this is definitely an issue. And, you know, I see a lot of graduate jobs that are listed that, you know, they don't mention pay, they don't mention benefits. You know, a lot of them tend to be, as I think Jeffrey mentioned in the article, for a lot of these delivery driver gig economy type jobs, which, of course, are important, not saying that they're not. But, you know, there needs to be, I think, a more, I guess, even spread of opportunities out there.
Not only that, but I heard a snippet of something yesterday here on air somewhere. You know what? And I forget where it was, and I wish I could remember. But it was basically somebody was talking to younger kids about what they wanted to be when they grow up, you know, what profession they'd like to go into. And he was saying, go on.
Yes, this was my conversation with Kelvin Tan of Project ID yesterday at 11 a.m., where he mentioned that a lot of the B40 community students that he used to teach, they want to be firemen, policemen.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just the idea that they don't really know that these opportunities are out there because they're unaware that there are more opportunities if you're educated a particular way or you've studied a particular subject. Now, that's food for thought. So if you missed that conversation, go back, have a listen to that podcast from yesterday. What was it called, Chris?
I forget what it's called exactly, but it was at 11 a.m. yesterday on Raise Your Game.
We'll find out when we come back after the break, of course. Is your company currently hiring or looking for fresh graduates? Why or why not? Let us know via WhatsApp, 018-789-8899, or you can get us on the polls on Twitter and Instagram. That's at BFM Radio. Chris, I'm sure you've got the podcast name up right now.
I do indeed. It's called Empowering Students with Leadership Skills.
There you go. Now, we are going to take a short break, and we'll give you some of the numbers when we come back. Also, if you are a fresh grad and you are looking as well, please pipe in, give us some comments over on WhatsApp or Twitter or wherever you are, and we'll get to those shortly. Some music to take us into the break, though. It's Bill Withers with Use Me here on BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Christine Wong.
We're asking you a question. We'll get to that in just a moment. And the reason that we are speaking about this is we saw a piece that graduates in Malaysia are struggling to secure jobs that match their qualifications despite a rising unemployment rate in the country. While policymakers have called for intensified efforts from the government to fix this problem, industry experts believe it's a lot more complex than it seems. We're giving you some quotes just a few moments ago from Shafi Abdal. Now, moving on. In the letters to editor section.
Yes, so in that section of Free Malaysia Today, a reader named Koo Kok Kyung responded to the issue of employment mismatch by bringing up some very interesting points about TVET within the Malaysian education system. Here is a snippet. He says, my take is that hands-on learning should be brought back into the system and further enhanced rather than be given less emphasis or totally ignored. There is a real mismatch in the demand and supply chain. Most Asian parents want their kids to be on the academic pathway and wear the mortarboard as a sign of success. But more practically, it would be those equipped with the right skill set or niche technical know-how who will be able to earn a decent living. There are too many knowledge workers with laptops these days. No one wants to get their hands dirty when the real money is in such hands-on industries. As such, the Education and Human Resource Ministries should review their strategies and plans for TVET so that we will not repeat the same mistake we had made a few decades ago.
Interesting take. Now, over on Twitter, we're going to give you a quick update on the numbers before we go over to Jeffrey. The question, of course, is your company currently hiring or looking for fresh graduates? Why or why not? 44% of you saying no, not hiring. 35%, yes, hiring fresh grads. 15%, no, hiring for experience. And 6% are saying yes, but no luck hiring so far. Those 6% of you that are having no luck hiring, have a look for those that are hiring fresh grads. They're at 35%. Chris, what do you have got over on Instagram?
So on Instagram, the only options that we have are yes and no. And yes is at 42% and no is at 58%. We've also got a response here from PDX3156, who says, always need new supply of talent who are hungry and malleable.
Excellent stuff. Right. We did say we've got Jeffrey Williams on the phone. He's an economist from the Malaysia University of Science and Technology on the line. He's going to expand on his thoughts regarding this employment mismatch. Jeffrey, in the article, you mentioned that this problem needs to be resolved by the market and not the government. Could you just expand a little bit on that?
The labour market can be very dynamic. And although there are very many jobs, actually the vast majority, that have and will continue to be around for centuries, in fact, we do see new types of employment emerging all the time and other types of work become obsolete all the time. So, for example, we will always have chefs and waiters in restaurants, but even 3 years ago, for example, we didn't see a demand for audiovisual designers to help us with university courses, which we need in great numbers now. We also probably wouldn't have predicted 5 years ago that there would be a collapse in the demand for street hailing taxis. We saw them all over the place and they were very normal. But now that's been disrupted and instead we are seeing e-hailing cab drivers as an alternative. We probably wouldn't have seen that change in the labour market 5 years ago. So it's easy to forecast some types of jobs, but in other cases, it's not so easy to forecast. And the market evolves very quickly and the demand for skills and jobs also changes very quickly. And the government can't predict these things or anticipate them with effective or timely policies. But the market can do this more effectively by allowing people to respond according to the demand that they see for the jobs that are available in the workplace. So the market provides a better solution, although it's not perfect.
But the article also mentions government policy as the source of these employment issues. How so?
Government policy has actually created many of the employment problems that we're seeing now. So, for example, under the 10th Malaysia Plan, in 2010, the government aimed to create 3.3 million jobs by 2020, just last year. But the plan involved having 68% of those jobs for people who didn't have a university degree. And this was because the government noted that around 70% of people in the labour force don't have a degree. So it makes some sort of sense. They also said that 56.3% of these jobs would be low-income jobs. 29.5% would be only middle income jobs. And this is because, again, they noted that people without degrees tend to be in low income types of work. So they set all of these targets in stone and they've implemented the Malaysia Plan since 2010. And actually that implementation has been completely successful and they have created jobs. But these jobs are low paid, low value added, precarious types of informal employment. They weren't so good at creating high-value jobs requiring degrees because the market itself didn't follow the same plan. So you have graduates taking over the lower-skilled jobs because those are the only jobs that are available. And as a consequence, they are doing jobs in types of work which are lower than their qualifications. So they are, by definition, underemployed. And because they're taking over these jobs, they're forcing down the salary levels, actually, in that segment. And so that harms the people who would otherwise take these jobs, that are the people without degrees, because there's more people available to take the jobs at lower salaries. So for many years, we've seen all manner of plans and roadmaps and blueprints from the government targeting different industries and different segments to try to create different types of jobs. But generally, these are low-paid jobs because these are the jobs that are actually easiest for the government to create. And now we're in a situation where 50% of salaried workers earn less than around 2,000 ringgit per month, even though Bank Negara says that a living wage should be 2,700 for a single person and about 6,500 per month for a couple with children. So when the focus on policy is on creating a perceived type of labour market or to create a perceived planned workforce, then you get an outcome which is misaligned to the realities of life, which don't follow the same plan as the government.
Okay, hold that thought, Jeffrey. We need to take a short break here. We've got some music coming up from Diana Ross with Upside Down here on BFM. But don't forget, we are asking you a question. Is your company currently hiring or looking for fresh graduates? Why or why not? Do let us know. We are polling on Twitter and on Instagram. When we come back, we'll be speaking about an opinion piece that was citing TVET in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me and Christine here on BFM 89.9.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9. 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Christine Wong.
So graduates in Malaysia are struggling to secure jobs that match their qualifications despite a rising unemployment rate in the country. And whilst policymakers have called for intensified efforts from the government to fix this problem, some industry experts believe it's a lot more complex than it seems. We've been speaking with an economist. It is Jeffrey. Jeffrey Williams. He's from the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. He's still on the line with us. We'll get to him in just a moment. The question that we're asking, though, is your company currently hiring or looking for fresh graduates? Why or why not? Let us know via WhatsApp, via Twitter, and via Instagram. Instagram and Twitter, of course, we're at BFM Radio. And if you want to WhatsApp us, it's 018-789-8899. Numbers so far on Twitter, 44%, no, not hiring. 34%, yes, hiring fresh grads. 16%, no, we're hiring for experience, and 6% of you saying yes, but we've had no luck hiring. Over on Instagram, any updates, Chris?
On Instagram, the poll hasn't really changed very much. We don't have other responses, but we're still at 41% for yes, 59% for no.
Great. Jeffrey, thanks for waiting. Now, you might have heard us just a few minutes ago talking about this article, or rather an opinion piece, as in response to the article, citing TVET as the solution to our employment issues. What are your thoughts on TVET being sidelined? And is it really a solution?
When we're talking about technical vocational education and training, or TVET, it isn't so much that TVET has been sidelined in Malaysia, although it's true that TVET is a sort of Cinderella in post-secondary education. The real concern, again, is that TVET is run within the government system, and it isn't aligned to the needs of the labour market. And particularly, it's spread across at least 7 separate ministries, all running different types of TVET program in multiple departments. And there are often turf wars and who should control and who should be in charge. And there's very little coordination across these different offerings. And that's a problem because it leads to a very complicated and ill-focused approach to TVET. But most importantly, it's the involvement of businesses that is ineffective in the Malaysian system. There was an attempt to reform this in the past under the TVET Empowerment Committee, and that was headed by Nurul Izzah Anwar. But unfortunately, that was overtaken by events and changes in the government and so on. And that's a shame, actually, because TVET is important and it must be reformed. The most commonly presented gold standard model is the dual vocational education model from Germany. And fortunately, Malaysia has a very successful dual vocational program based on the German model, which is run in Penang at the Penang Skills Development Center. And it's more than a pilot now because it's been running for a number of years and it's a very successful program. And one of the essential elements of the success is the involvement of industry and the arm's length approach when it comes to the involvement of the government. The government is supportive, but it doesn't interfere too much, so that the curricula are jointly determined between the training provider and the industrial partners, but it's mostly determined by the needs of industry. And the participants, that is the trainees on the programs, they work whilst they're studying, and they do this at the same time. So it's not a sequential matter of going to college first and then taking up their work placement and then perhaps going back to college or dealing with it sequentially. It's actually done at the same time. And that's a very important element of the success of the program. First, the high level of industry involvement. Second, the fact that the participants are working whilst they're studying.
Now, Jeffrey, from what we can tell, there seems to be a disconnect between what the market needs versus what these graduates have to offer. Where does this disconnect stem from?
In terms of the disconnect, I think that government policy is a major cause of the disconnect, as we've mentioned before, because various plans and blueprints and roadmaps have driven the training agenda and the university curriculum to follow policies devised by the government rather than to follow the market needs. And the policies themselves are often not driven by proper evidence-based research on what is actually needed in the market. But the universities also have to take some responsibility for that disconnect, because they tend to follow government policy, even the universities in the private sector. And if they see a new blueprint coming up, they will immediately create programs in that area. And so, for example, at the moment, we're seeing a slew of programs in Fourth Industrial Revolution or data analytics, for example, without any assessment by the universities, as far as I can see, as to whether there will be an actual demand, that type of training in the market, in the labor market in the future. And we're not seeing, by contrast, we're not seeing enough courses in areas that resist automation that's promoted in the Fourth Industrial Revolution, areas such as social care or personal services, which are certain to see a rise in demand in the future, particularly because we know that the population is getting older. And as the population is getting older, there is a need for more social care and personal services for elderly people. We also know that creative arts and social sciences and humanities are also neglected, even though there will definitely be growth in demand for skills or the type of skills taught in these type of areas. And so, for example, in the past, the government has promoted retail industries or insurance industries. And I know of at least one private university that specifically created degrees in these areas because of the promotion of retail and the promotion of insurance by some specific government plan. And in fact, these degree programs were a complete failure. There were almost no students and no interest from retailing employers or insurance employers, because the program didn't map to what they want in the graduates. And so the universities followed the policy document rather than the market demand, and then the program has failed. And I think the final element of the disconnect comes from businesses themselves, which are actually not offering enough graduate level jobs. And in fact, what we will see with more automation as part of the Industrial Revolution, the Fourth Industrial Revolution, will be that less demand for the type of degrees that we currently offer in Malaysian universities and where our students are very highly concentrated. For example, as we see more e-commerce and digital finance, there will be less need for accountants and auditors, because basic functions such as bookkeeping, accounting and auditing will be increasingly automated. But these are exactly where we have huge numbers of students and where our students and our time and our activity and our resources are concentrated. In fact, we commonly hear that 60% of the jobs in the future are unknown to us today. Well, it's not completely true, but it is true that we will see many new jobs in which we're unaware of at the moment. And we will see many existing jobs which will become obsolete. And this has always been true, actually. Jobs come and jobs go. And that's why we need to stop training specifically for existing jobs or preparing people for the workforce, which is the sort of mantra of higher education at the moment. And it has been for some time, unfortunately. And instead, what we need to do is to teach learning skills, teach people how to go about learning new things constantly, so that we can prepare them for life, actually, whatever that might be. So we need to be able to provide the skills and opportunities to help people to get a meaningful source of income rather than just to get a job. So the disconnect is due to a lack of effective interaction between the government, the universities and businesses. But it's also a problem of understanding what a university is for. Actually, universities prepare people for life, not for the workplace.
Thanks for that, Jeffrey. I'm sorry, but we're going to have to take another short break. But when we come back, I have a few more questions for you to just to wrap up with. Folks, of course, we are asking that question. Is your company currently hiring or looking for fresh grads? Why or why not? Let us know via WhatsApp, Twitter and Instagram. Music to take us into the break. It is The Breeders with Cannonball. You're tuned in to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Benchmark for managers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise BizBytes. Rich Bradbury here with
Christine Wong.
We're talking to fresh graduates out there and companies that are currently hiring or not hiring fresh graduates. Why or why not? Polling on the numbers so far, 44.6% of you are saying you're not hiring. 33.8% of you saying yes, hiring fresh grads. 16.2% no, we're hiring for experience. And 5.4% of you saying yes, but no luck hiring. Over to WhatsApp here from Anne. She says, I'm in the IT industry. We're always hiring. Cheap labor, cheap contractors, fresh grads mostly, for various IT projects at customer sites.
Hmm.
Over on Instagram, Chris?
On Instagram, we have the poll up at yes is at 46%, no is at 54%.
We're talking about this because graduates in Malaysia are struggling to secure jobs that match their qualifications despite a rising unemployment rate in the country. While policymakers have called for intensified efforts from the government to fix this problem, industry experts believe it's a lot more complex than that. We have been speaking to Jeffrey Williams. He is an economist from Malaysia University of Science and Technology. Just before the break, we were speaking about TVET. We're speaking about the disconnect and where or where it might not come from. Jeffrey, let's put everything into a big bowl now and ask you, you know, how will all of these issues impact the economy long term?
In terms of the impact on the economy in the long term, if we are educating and training people in the wrong way with the wrong skills, then we're going to have an underqualified workforce and a workforce which isn't responsive and creative and agile. And so any hope that we might have of a high value, high quality, high income, high growth economy will be damaged if we don't deal with these issues effectively. The narrative of the fourth industrial revolution actually tells us that the competitive edge coming from these new technologies will swing back to the high income developed economies because that's where these technologies are mostly created. And so the low cost advantages that we have seen in developing economies and here in Asia and to some extent, to a large extent here in Malaysia, it will become irrelevant because you won't be able to get competitive advantage due to low costs as jobs are automated and the automation helps to reduce the costs through technology. So if we're training people for jobs in the current labor market, they won't be prepared for opportunities that might come in the future. And what's worse, in the current circumstances, we are still training people for jobs in the labor market of the past, actually, which in many instances are already or are very quickly becoming obsolete. So our whole educational approach has to change to focus much more on broader skills, broader social skills, broader learning skills, technological literacy by all means, but we also need to have very strong creative skills, very strong analytical skills, helping people to understand how to solve problems, whatever those problems might be. But so above all, the type of skills that we need to be focusing on are skills in how to think, how to learn, how to solve problems, how to deal with issues as they arise and to do it effectively and quickly, based on just working your way through the problem as you see it. And that is, we've got to create a proper learning environment in our universities so that they're not just upgraded training centers. And unfortunately, many university leaders don't have that vision. And they're still focusing very much on vocational skills, training people for the job market, actually, when in fact, the job market is changing very quickly in front of their very eyes.
Now, Jeffrey, ride-hailing and food delivery platforms have absorbed a significant number of fresh graduates to their network. You mentioned them in the piece, but also highlight the negative impact of this trend. Could you elaborate for us?
So when we're thinking about the gig economy, I think the first thing we have to say is that gig economy jobs are actually great as a stopgap or a side hustle, as some people call it. And many people have benefited from gig economy jobs, especially during this crisis. And these types of jobs have been a lifesaver for many people. So they are valuable and they are important. But we also have to remember that they're very difficult jobs with long hours and very low rates of pay, 0 hours contracts, which means you don't do work, you don't get paid. And as more people have joined this group of workers, competition has intensified between the workers themselves. And so it's more difficult for them to get rides or to get the deliveries, to make up their daily targets, or even to pay their daily costs, which could be petrol and insurance and so on. And so the risks of this type of work, particularly the costs of this type of work, fall on the workers themselves rather than on the companies that they are working with, because actually the workers are not employed by those companies. They're working as freelancers. And they are in a new group of workers that we call the precariat. And what we mean by the term precariat is that they have very precarious or unstable forms of work with very unstable income and very unstable and informal options. Often they don't have any form of insurance or medical cover, for example. Although SOSCO and the EPF are now trying to change that in order to provide some sort of support for them, which is a good thing. So while these may be good as stopgap jobs, they don't really provide a long-term solution to unemployment or underemployment because these are low value-added types of work and they don't really add very much to growth or to higher incomes. And it can lead to dependency because it takes up so much of your time in order to earn even very low amounts of money on a daily basis or a weekly basis. And because it takes up so much of your time, it's very difficult for you to devote time to looking for a better type of job. And sometimes then, this type of dependency leads to intergenerational in-work poverty. And sometimes we call this the working poor. In other words, you can have very large numbers of people who are spending a very great deal of time earning very little. And it's estimated that there might be as many as 4 million people in this category, which is 1/4 of the workforce. And the Department of Statistics data shows us that 3.2 million people, or nearly 19% of the workforce, is either unemployed or underemployed. And often they are underemployed in these gig economy type jobs. And this is why we are seeing persistently low incomes.
Thanks for being so patient with us, Jeffrey. We've got one final question just before we let you go. And that's, you know, coming back to government policy. What do you think can be done to ensure that this trend doesn't continue?
So if we want to ask what the government can do to try to look at this issue, this trend, well, personally, I think that the government should stop what are increasingly futile attempts to try to plan or to control the labour market, because the evidence is increasingly clear that at best it can create millions of jobs, but these jobs tend to be low paid, low value added jobs, which lead to longer term structural problems. Instead, it's really the job of the government to create the right type of economic and business environment, the right type of market environment for companies to invest and then to employ people without government interference in the context of what we often call a social market economy. Now, in the long term, the type of employment issues that we've been discussing really will be better resolved by the market rather than by the government itself. And we really need to be looking at creating meaningful, well-paid and sustainable forms of employment, which are underpinned by strong market fundamentals. But within all of that, workers must also be empowered so that they can negotiate better terms and conditions and they don't become part of the precariat or part of the working poor with this dependency problem and often intergenerational dependency problem. So we can go about creating that type of environment by promoting more opportunities for enterprise, particularly supporting SMEs as the backbone of the economy. SMEs are huge employers. In some countries, here in Malaysia, they employ about half of the workforce, but in some countries, they can be the employers of 80 or even 90% of the workforce. So there is some scope for SMEs to create very many more meaningful, well-paid jobs. And even to support micro-enterprises, which would focus on creating freelance work. Sometimes it's called gig economy type work, but it's a different type of gig economy type work. It's freelance, it's professional. And these are jobs for people where they can earn a good and stable income, where they're empowered through running their own company or their own micro enterprise. It's normally higher skill type work, which is higher value added. And then that helps them to create a source of income, even if they don't have a full-time job. And that type of thing certainly can and should be encouraged through startup and scale-up schemes for micro, small, and medium-sized enterprises. And this opens up a whole new approach to employment and how people will be employed and how they will earn a living and how they will get a good income. It's an empowering and flexible way of encouraging people to earn a living. And that's the type of thing that we should support, and every type of support should be given to that type of enterprise. And these involve supply-side reforms within a social market economy to boost business activity, reduce government interference, and promote decent jobs. Decent jobs is a type of category promoted by the International Labour Organization, for example. And these are exactly the type of unorthodox ideas that Tengku Zafrul was calling for recently. And so I guess we're looking forward to see whether we will have these type of unorthodox ideas in the 12th Malaysia Plan or in the budget.
Wonderful stuff. Thanks ever so much, Jeffrey, for your patience today. And thank you for sticking on the line with us all the way throughout the show. Of course, that was Jeffrey Williams from the Malaysia University of Science and Technology. He's an economist over there. Now, we've pretty much run out of time, but we're going to have a quick update on the numbers. They haven't really changed much, to be honest, folks, since the beginning of the show. Around 44% of you saying, no, you're not hiring, with 35% saying, yes, you are hiring. 15% saying you're hiring for experience rather than fresh grads. And 5.2% saying yes, but no luck hiring. Chris, any change over on Instagram?
On Instagram, nope, the poll's still at 46% for yes, 54% for no. And we've got Victor Raj, who says fresh graduates are cheap, obviously.
Yeah. Okay, it's time for us to wrap up, though, ladies and gents. Thank you very much for all of your tweets, all of your comments, and all of your votes. And if you did miss any part of this show, don't forget you can download the podcast wherever you get it from. We recommend the BFM app, of course, available from the Apple App Store or Google Play. Don't go anywhere, though. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay. Through the use of technology and smartphones, the travel experience has been made much more seamless, allowing you to book a flight, hotel, and other travel arrangements in one go. But who is the one who builds this critical infrastructure, and how has the pandemic affected everything? We'll be hearing from the Executive Vice President and Managing Director Asia Pacific of the Amadeus IT Group, Mika DeShepa. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.